How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, and we have a ton of it to talk about today. Last week, when we went off the air, we were talking about the new Monday Night Wars, which were scheduled to start on Monday, March 8th. Didn't know what was going to happen. It was uncharted territory. There had been one show on January 4th, WWE and TNA Impact head-to-head, and it was a good night for Impact, all things considered. They didn't come close to beating Raw or anything like that, but they scored their highest ratings of all time, their biggest viewership of all time, and March 8th was a night that they were going to go head-to-head permanently, starting for the first time, and we've got the results of that battle. If you even want to call it a battle, it was a one-sided slaughter is what it was. We're going to talk about the Monday Night Wars here on the show. Probably a lot today because I have a feeling a lot of people are going to have a lot of phone calls and emails about that situation. But a lot of other news as well. Impact did a replay on Thursday night with a perhaps shocking rating, perhaps not, depending on how you look at it. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the road to WrestleMania. WWE's biggest show of the year is coming up. We've got pretty much the complete card for the show. There are going to be a couple of additions probably happening on Raw tomorrow night. We'll talk about that. It is a big weekend as well, as besides WrestleMania, on the same weekend, it is the UFC pay-per-view, George St. Pierre and Dan Hardy. And, of course, they had their first of three specials on Spike TV hyping up that show. I saw the first one, not blown away. We'll talk to Mike about that show as well. And, of course, all of the rest of the news. We'll talk SmackDown, a new guy heading into the Hall of Fame. I watched the Evolve show, the first Evolve DVD. We can talk a little bit about that. Also saw ECW. Been watching that on HDNet now. I don't have HDNet, but I've got a link they've been sending me to watch the shows, so I've been able to check those out and review those. We'll talk about that. Plus NXT, the ratings, back down to ECW levels. We'll talk about what happened and why, and a bunch of other news as well. Of course, taking your phone calls and emails throughout the afternoon, and a lot of stuff to talk about. We'll be back in just a moment talking more. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. A lot of news to talk about today, and Mike, this past Monday night, March 8th, it was the first new shot in the supposed Monday Night Wars, and the ratings, Raw 3.4, Impact 0.98. What'd you think?
Well, they certainly earned the 0.98. You know, it's we can. Last Thursday's show was, well, I don't. Last Thursday's show was worse than this show, but it was a big glowing sign that you know, we had no confidence whatsoever going into Monday night. And there's people out there that that are saying that they preferred this show to Raw. I don't know why. Even though Raw didn't try, I mean, don't get me wrong, WWE didn't try at all on Monday, and it was still, to me, a better show than Impact, but I don't know how anybody thought that Impact put on a halfway decent show. I mean, if you go up and down the whole thing, just like last Thursday, if you go up and down the whole thing in almost every single segment that aired, there was some glowing flaw. From Jeff Hardy, if Jeff Hardy wasn't signed before January 4th and he's signed now, you know, a week before he's supposed to stand trial, why? Why is he running in on the main event? I mean, if he wasn't signed before 1-4, why is he doing this now before his trial? And if he was signed before this, why haven't they been using him up to this point so they can get something maximum out of him? Rob Van Dam, I mean, basically, he should have been in where Rob Van Dam's spot was. They should have just basically flipped roles. Rob Van Dam, who you don't advertise to be there, and then he comes out, and then you beat him down for 10 minutes. Shannon Moore coming back to, you know, the third time he will go with the Prince of Punk thing, and he was just there with Jeff Hardy, who's supposed to be this big main event guy in your company. And his buddy was with him just, 2 months ago, and no one knew who he was when he came out. Jeff Jarrett can't act. Mick Foley, minstrel show would be too strong, but the step and fetch it routine of, you know, it was like Ric Flair when Russo came in and he was wrestling with Lex Luger in a suit, you know, in his shirt and pants. You have, you know, Mick Foley out there in that goofy suit doing these goofy, the goofy segments he was doing last week. It's just absolutely ridiculous. You can point to every single thing on the show. The Hebner thing, the Dave Hebner thing, or the Earl Hebner thing of, you know, I need a second chance. Didn't Hulk Hogan just admonish you for screwing Kurt Angle 2 months ago? And then, you know, to top it off, at the end of the show, one thing we've talked about is the production has gotten better in TNA. The production has gotten better. Although we got a shot this week of Eric Bischoff just randomly sitting there in a chair when they cut to the wrong shot. But Jeff Hardy, who, you know, all this stuff, at the end, you missed his shot. I mean, it was something throughout the entire show that just made me shake my head. And it just, they deserve the 0.98.
It's funny that you ask why. Yeah, you asked why a lot early on in your little rant right there. And it's kind of funny because, you know, like today, many days later, I laugh. I laugh about it. I too had a very passionate rant about Impact several days ago where I also asked why. And I frothed and yelled and screamed. And now, like a few days later, I just laugh. I mean, I don't even understand how. I mean, it's a cycle. It's like I don't know the analogy to use, but an abusive relationship here with TNA where, you know, something happens, I get really mad, and then I just kind of laugh about it and I just don't care at all. And then the next show, I'm going to get really mad again. It's like I never learned my lesson to just permanently not care. There's always part of me that hopes that something's going to turn around. I don't even know why, because I even asked the question, why would you ever hope that something is going to turn around? Because they keep doing the same stuff over and over, and for some reason they think if they keep doing the same stupid stuff over and over, something's going to change. Well, for some reason, I always still have hope. And at this point, I just don't know why. I have no idea why I still have hope.
I have no hope. I have no hope whatsoever. That's why they have to prove it before they would ever, you know, get me that passionate, you know, too into their product. The question of why more for me is just logically, if you sit there, every person this week has said the same thing, why about the entire show? From, you know, you to Les Thatcher to me to everybody, Crumbly, our biggest TNA fan, everybody asks why about this show. And how this show can, I just, if I'm Spike TV, how is this an entertaining show to Spike TV? You know, how is this an entertaining show to anybody with the big gaping holes all the way through? It's so incredibly obnoxious. It's not even funny. It's why is this thing actually even still going?
It is funny when we go on our website and there are polls about what show did you think was better on Monday night, Raw or Impact, and you know, a lot of people voted Impact. I have absolutely no idea why, but
it's because Raw didn't try, and that's all. The only thing you can say is, well, WWE just did WWE, and Impact happened to be on Monday. That's the only reason anybody would do that.
Yeah, but
or
I mean,
they were just lying.
Well, I do think that we often get bombarded by people that want to make a point, but I don't know. I mean, the show.
Didn't Haku beat Danny Hodge in a Who's Toughest poll or something?
Yes, there is that. But, I mean, you know, sometimes I realize that Impact had way more energy. The fans were way more into Impact than Raw. Impact had some surprises. But, I mean, in what way was it a better wrestling show? Because you I don't know, maybe. I mean, obviously there are a million people that's their kind of show. Because the show does, you know, it did 1.4 million viewers. So there's 1.4 million people in this country that's their kind of show. But I think the key is that it's been shown that there's not any more than that. Because if you go back to January 4th, there was a period on January 4th where over 3 million people were watching Impact. In fact, if you add in the DVRs, I think it was something like 3.3 million or something like that. So just slightly less than the number of people that watched SmackDown watched Impact that night. Now, of those 3.3 million people or so, you know, a week, 2 weeks went by, all those people gave up. because this is not their kind of show. This happens all the time with Impact. They'll get new viewers for whatever reason. They sign a Mick Foley, they sign a Kurt Angle, and, you know, those new viewers give it a shot, they last a couple of weeks, and then they give up, because this is not the kind of show that more than about 1.5 million people can tolerate every single week. Now, if you're happy with 1.5 million people watching your product, great! Continue doing what you're doing. If you've got this idea about, we don't need 2 million people, we only need 1.5. We'll get a percentage of these 1.5 million people to buy our shows, great! Go to town. But their idea seems to be that they want to grow the audience. And they have had so many opportunities to grow the audience, and all these new people that give TNA a try give up on it again. This is a very obvious pattern, but they don't see this. They're just like, if we keep trying, something's going to work here at some point. And it's not going to.
Well, yeah, the show had more energy. People on methamphetamines have more energy, but you don't want to hang around them.
It's true.
They don't even take care of those 1.5 million people, you know, who watch their show, who are trying to watch their storylines and then must actually care about their storylines. What are the matches for this month's pay-per-view? Who's the number one contender to the TNA title? Who knows?
We're going to talk about that after the break, and I got an email here that I've just got to read when we come back, because it's emails like this that explain to me why things are not, in fact, ever going to change with TNA, because they've got a lot of great talent, they've got a lot of great wrestlers, but at the end of the day, the people putting the show together, as we've mentioned many times, have absolutely no idea what they're doing. I'm going to read this email when we come back from break, and it will explain a lot. Also, your phone calls and emails coming up later on in the show. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here for the next 2 hours, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. And we got a lot of news to talk about today. We've been discussing the Monday Night Wars from this past Monday night, the ratings for both shows, and so much to talk about here, but I wanted to read this email. This is from Kark here. He said, I found this on YouTube. It's TNA Explosion for March 11th. March 11th, mind you. This is a couple of days after March 8th, which was the last Impact show. Says, looks like the Explosion match for March 11th is, get this, Mike, Awesome Kong and Hamada versus the Beautiful People for the Knockouts Tag titles. The same titles that were stripped from Kong and Hamada on Monday because they not defended them in 30 days. So yes, on Monday's show, they announced that Kong and Hamada had not defended the titles for 30 days, and they were being stripped of the belts. They put them up in a tournament. The Beautiful People won the tournament on Monday, and then on Thursday, they aired their internet-only Explosion match, which was Kong and Hamada defending the titles against the Beautiful People.
You know what my hope in that is? My hope in that is Samoa Joe is the special guest referee.
He may be. I could start it. But unfortunately, he's not. He's still missing.
Well, who cares? Who cares? The man was kidnapped on national TV. The thing is, and there's one thing, too. If you're not going to say something that helps the story along, I mean, because remember when the Undertaker's ministry, they took Bradshaw and Farouk, and it was goofy and you know, the teddy bear. It was goofy and stupid, but at least it had a purpose. You knew why it was happening. Undertaker was going to steal these guys. Why was Samoa Joe stolen?
Well,
you know, they don't talk about it at all. Don't have Taz even mention it if you're not going to continue anything about it. Just drop it and let it go. They do that with a lot of other things. Drop this and let it go.
They have to remind us that he's missing. It's apparently a very important part of the story here.
I guess that's okay.
I was just going to say, didn't this happen like, you know, 6-7 months ago when the... Remember, wasn't he kidnapped before and then he came back, the Nation of Violence or whatever?
I
could have sworn he's been kidnapped before.
So maybe they just want to say it might be the Nation of Violence again. Maybe remind fans that there was a Nation of Violence. I mean, Taz was in that. He was the leader or something, right?
I think he was briefly. I have absolutely
no
idea.
That great quality control, it was like beer money, too. Why are they doing this? Because they want to be on TV. They were just on TV last week beating champions.
Yeah. Yeah, we didn't even mention, I know you've got much to say here, but we need to mention Hogan and Flair. This is a very important part of the story.
Oh.
They dragged out Hulk Hogan. He has not had a match on U.S. television since he wrestled Randy Orton, for those of you that can even remember that, many years ago. Ric Flair, of course, retired at WrestleMania a few years back against Shawn Michaels. He has not wrestled in the U.S. since. They did have that deal in Australia. They did 4 matches in 6 days or something like that. But this was their first television match in years. Now, I would actually recommend everybody go back and listen to last week's edition of this show. You can probably find it in the sports byline, the podcast library on iTunes or wherever. Go back and listen to last week's show, because I think you'd be astounded at everything we were talking about last week and how it largely came to pass the next day. I mean, we were prophets on last week's show. I remember very specifically talking about how that Thursday show, the Thursday prior to March 8th, they did the big storyline to build up Hogan and Flair's tag match. And they built it up by having Hulk Hogan and Abyss beat the hell out of Ric Flair and AJ Styles and bloody up Ric Flair. And Flair just bled a gusher. He was bleeding all over the place. It was completely disgusting. And of course, the obvious question that we asked was, why would you build up your biggest match of all time on the biggest show of all time? Why would you build that up by having the baby faces get their revenge on the heels? What reason are you giving people to tune in? As it turned out, we were correct. What reason was there? When Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair got dragged out on television to have their match, actually, they came out at the beginning of the show. We'll talk about that in a second. But when they got dragged out at the end of the show for their match, the show did a 0.76 rating. This is the final quarter of the show. Now, I know that people are going to say, well, Brian, the match itself was in the overrun. It did a 1.01. Well, first off, who cares about a 1.01? That's horrible. That's a horrible number for Hulk Hogan versus Ric Flair. 1.01. Second off, that's in the overrun. So there were people that tuned into the show at that point to see the show that was coming on after Impact. So it's really not fair to compare the overruns for Raw and Impact, because in both cases, you've got fans tuning in to see what's coming next. So we'll take the head-to-head wrestling show quarter, which was 10:45 to 11, and it was 0.76 for Impact against 3.6 for WWE, Vince McMahon and John Cena. How do you bring out Ric Flair and Hulk Hogan and get a 0.76? By doing an angle to set up the match where the baby faces get their revenge. That was number one. There was absolutely no reason for us to want to see this match. The baby faces got the revenge. What more is there at that point? Not to mention the deal throughout the show of various people coming up to Hulk Hogan and telling him, you're too old, you should not be in the ring, you could be killed, you should not be wrestling. How is this building up a match, Mike?
It's not. In fact, it's making you say, why am I watching this? That's what it does. I mean, and the thing is, they're not only doing it once, they're doing it twice.
Yeah.
With Kurt Angle and Kennedy. The thing this week with me was, you know, not only have they've had the blow-off match, not only have they had the blow-off match, they've had the old back-in-the-day territorial boot in the ass for the person who lost the feud. You know, he stumbles back out. You get one more week out of the guy. He stumbles back out and says, even though I got blown away, it doesn't matter. I really won that match. And they have people come out and then literally pick him up and throw him in a trash can.
Yeah.
And Kennedy would go to a different territory now, and he'd be gone, and Kurt Angle would move on to something else. They have done all of this before they even have the big match.
Yes.
Which I would assume it was just going to be one. It wasn't going to be a series of matches. So they're one big thing. Just like they were building this week, or since January, they've been building to this big day of moving head-to-head with WWE. And that's the best that they could come up with.
Yeah, it was like they did this show, and they did a whole bunch of stuff that would hopefully get people to watch, which didn't work. And now that leads us to this coming Monday night, where what is their follow-up? On Raw, as boring as that show was, on Raw they announced that next week you're going to get Steve Austin returning to Raw, Vince McMahon and Bret Hart doing a contract signing, and three WrestleMania main event rematches, including Shawn Michaels versus Chris Jericho. What did Impact announce for next week on the show? Why, nothing. They didn't announce a single match.
We'll check Dixie's Twitter during the week. You know, it's amazing that, you know, if Dixie's going to become a character now, as she was pushed by Sting, if she's going to become a character now, I want her to explain why. She brings in Hogan and Bischoff, but then will let people that helped with TNA, like Jeff Jarrett, get treated so poorly. Why Mick Foley, who's a New York Times best-selling author, has got to play a shuffle routine next to Eric Bischoff. You know, explain that, too, if she's going to be a character. There's some more plot holes that are blown wide open in TNA. They are a mess. They're an absolute mess.
So this coming Monday night, head-to-head. Oh, go ahead.
I just used to try to at least try to put some, like, okay, well, you know, some sort of positive spin in my mind on it a little bit, but it's just flat out, your show sucks. Your show sucks. People watching it think it sucks. People who have been longtime fans of TNA think it sucks. Hey, fire whoever you have to fire. Do whatever you have to do, but fix it or just stop.
We actually had
go back to Thursday and go away.
We had a number. Well, they may go back to Thursday. Let's talk about that number, in fact. Thursday did a replay. They aired a replay in the old Impact time slot on Spike TV. And the Thursday replay did a 1. Monday did a 0.98. And Thursday did a 0.97. I don't...
So in their minds, they've now done a 1.95, right?
Well, that may be how they're looking at this. I just was thinking, you know, I actually predicted a 0.99 for Thursday. But when it actually came in, I was just like, so everybody just watched the show again? I mean, I have a hard time watching the show once. I can't even imagine watching it twice. I will note, however, that my DVR is still set to record. So I don't know if maybe that played a factor into it. Maybe people are just, they're creatures of habit. And Thursday night is Impact night. And people tuned in to see, let's see what's going to be on this Thursday in that time slot. And it was Impact, and they just left the TV on. I don't know.
Right, Brian, there's another thing, too, that's kind of weird. There's a lot of people without DVRs, though. I mean, they don't flick. So they're flicking back and forth on Monday. So they may watch it again on Thursday, just to, you know, the fact they can actually sit there and watch it, which that used to kill me about WCW, too, and I want to get to that after the break.
Yeah, we're going to head to a break right now. We'll come back and talk about that, and we'll also take your phone calls and emails. Got some emails coming in here, and we're going to open up the phone lines as well, so we'll do that. We'll talk more news, more Impact, WrestleMania lineup, and more. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And for all the news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, you can always head to WrestlingObserver.com. It's our website, updated throughout the day. We have daily news updates, all the news in pro wrestling, UFC, Strikeforce, WWE, TNA, the whole nine yards. And, of course, besides the news updates, we also have a ton of radio shows up there. If you listen to this show every week on Sports Byline USA or Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 122, and you can't get enough. We do pretty much daily radio shows up at WrestlingObserver.com. Dave Meltzer and I doing Wrestling Observer Radio 2 to 3 times per week. Brian and Vinny show 2 to 3 times per week. Figure Four Daily, interviewing big names from the pro wrestling and mixed martial arts worlds. The Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare, of course, with Mike Sempervivi here, talking Japan, hockey, a lot of hockey talk, boxing, WWE, TNA, and much, much more. And, of course, Five Star Radio with Mike Coughlin talking MMA. We've got the Dr. Keith Show. We've got the Carl Stern Show talking the history of wrestling. We've got everything up there. And if you want more, you can always head over to WrestlingObserver.com. Scroll down the page, and on the right-hand side, there's a list of our latest three free radio shows. You can check those out, and if you like what you hear, consider signing up. We have thousands and thousands of hours of audio. Not only new radio shows pretty much every day, but every show we've ever done is archived on the website. So basically, if you signed up today, and it's only $9.99 for an entire month, if you sign up today, you can basically go into the archives and hear shows from 2005, 2006, 2007, 2008. You can get caught up if you sign up today for all the stuff that you didn't sign up for years back. So sign up now. It's a great time since WrestleMania is coming and there's a lot of news. And get your audio fix, your news fix. It is the number one pro wrestling and mixed martial arts website in the entire world per various different stats on the internet, Alexa, the Google stats, that sort of thing. So anyway, check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. And Mike, you were ranting about TNA before the break, so continue.
And a great iPod application, too, that you can pick up. It's free as well. And when you become a member, you can access all the radio shows through it. It's a fantastic little thing there, too. But yeah, I'm a little under the weather, so I'm a little cranky right now. So I'm a little bit calmer now. But you know, one thing, if Impact is such a can't-miss show, if we're going heads up, if we've got stuff that you just can't miss, why are you replaying the show on Thursday? Make it. Force people into watching it, or put it on at least at a time where you'd have to DVR it. Put it on later. Make people watch it on Monday night. WCW used to kind of make me laugh with that because, at least here on the East Coast, I'm not sure how it was for you, Brian, TNT would air the thing from, you know, 8 to 11 and then turn around and repeat it.
Yeah.
So, you know, you could have just taped it at 11 o'clock and sat there and watched Raw, which, you know, that did help. When they started getting, you know, when they were red hot, there were a lot of people that actually did that, too. So if Impact's so important, force people into watching it on Monday.
Well, I will say that I think they are at this point, because I think that the Thursday night replay was a one-time-only thing. I don't think it's going to be a weekly thing. If it is, I really don't know what to say. I don't know. I mean, I guess in a sense, you know, it's funny, because the Saturday night replay, here's why the thing is so weird. People on our board, for example, were going, how did it get a 0.98 on Monday and a 0.97 on Thursday? I mean, did people really watch the show twice? People couldn't fathom that people watched the same people watched the show on both nights. I mean, it would seem to make sense that they actually doubled their viewership, because who would watch that show two times? Well, I don't know. I mean, you can't really tell which viewers watched a show twice or anything like that. But I will say that Impact used to have a replay on Saturday night, which did pretty good numbers. Not as good as the first time airing. But, you know, if they did 1.5 million viewers on a Thursday, they do like maybe 600,000-700,000 on Saturday night. So, you know, people always talk, well, you know, if you're talking the total Impact viewership, you've got to add those numbers together, because they're getting 1.5 million and you add in the Saturday night replay and they're over 2 million viewers every week. So Spike, I guess, decided, well, you know, they basically thought the same thing you did. You know, why are we doing this replay? We'll cancel Saturday night. And all those people that are watching on Saturday night will be forced to watch the show on Thursday, and that will bump up the rating. So they canceled the Saturday night replay, and do you know what the bump was for Thursday night?
What was it?
Zero. Zero. They had 600,000-700,000 viewers watching on Saturday night. They got rid of that airing, and zero new people began watching on Thursdays. Now, maybe I'm reading too much into this, but would it seem to me that, well, I mean, either way, it's bad. Either number one, you had 600,000 unique viewers on Saturday night, and when you canceled that show, they were so into Impact that they never bothered to find out when it was going to air at another time during the week, and they just gave up on it. That's a terrible stat. Or number two, people just watched the replay on Saturday night. They watched both shows. Those are pretty much the only two. In fact, those are the only two. Either they had unique viewers that gave up on the show when it was canceled Saturday night, or Saturday night was all Thursday viewers watching the show again. So, same thing with Monday and Thursday. I mean, that's pretty much the only thing that I can figure here. I mean, if you cancel that Thursday replay, which they're going to do this week, I mean, do you really think you're going to end up getting a 2 on Monday nights? Of course not. There's zero chance of it happening. So it probably, in fact, is all replay viewers.
Yeah, and then doing a replay of the show isn't necessarily that bad of an idea. If Viacom is a big company, you know, they can provide a bump to somewhere, have them put it on another channel the same way that WWE Raw and NXT air. Now, it's only for people who have HD, Universal HD, but it does air on Saturday night in a block. You know, put it on another channel so maybe people get a chance to see it or somebody new gets a chance to see it. But, you know, definitely not on Spike TV.
Let's talk a little bit about the WrestleMania card. I know we've been talking about...
Well, Brian, one more rant, too.
Oh, go for it.
We have, well, just because the other pain in the ass thing with their TV is, you know, obviously all the time we talk about selling pay, making money selling pay-per-views. Well, you know, Pacquiao and Clotty last night, I don't think it's going to do anywhere near as well as Bob Arum thinks it's going to do. I think it's going to be, it could be even less than 700,000 buys. I wouldn't fall over shocked. But you have that, you have UFC 111, you have WEC, you have, I'm trying to think of it, Mayweather and Shane Mosley, which is going to do over a million. You have a lot of events out there on pay-per-view. You know, you should be putting more into trying to sell pay-per-view in what's going to continue to be cramped months with the increase of just things that, you know, boxing events and smaller events airing on pay-per-view. I mean, the dollar's getting pulled even more. It's just after 8 years, they're not, it just blows my mind. After 8 years, they're not concerned with selling pay-per-views, and it's just going to get worse and worse and worse for them.
Well, the weird thing, too, is they've got this... Every now and then someone will say, well, TNA's mindset is... And then they'll say something that's just, like, completely ridiculous. Because, again, these people have no idea what they're doing. This pay-per-view is a good example. Lockdown is, like, their next big pay-per-view. Because of the January show, they did a match where the winner of this tournament, the Hard 8 tournament, or whatever it's called, 8-card stud, the winner of this tournament got a title shot at Lockdown. Now, Lockdown was 2 months away. The winner didn't get a shot at the next pay-per-view. The winner got a shot at Lockdown. Now, apparently, and this has happened before, TNA will have certain pay-per-views that they consider the big shows. And in the months in between, they have a show that they just figure nobody's going to buy. So, they do a couple of matches, they fill up a card, they shoot some goofy angles, and they just presume no one's going to buy this show. So, I don't know if people realize this or not, but it costs a lot of money to run on pay-per-view. There's a reason that you know, Dragon Gate USA, they've got a pay-per-view deal, but you don't see Florida Championship Wrestling just randomly running pay-per-views, or Ring of Honor, or Chikara. Even Ring of Honor is not doing pay-per-views right now. They're doing internet pay-per-views, because legit over-the-air pay-per-view is not cheap. The costs are very, very high, and you only get about 40% of the revenues. The other 60% go to the cable company. So the point is, it's not cheap to run a pay-per-view, and if you're doing 18,000 buys, which, by the way, you get 1.5 million viewers, and only 18,000 of those people care enough to buy your pay-per-view. That's a disaster as it is, but you only get 18,000 buys for a pay-per-view, you're losing money. So if you know a pay-per-view is going to be if you know it's going to be a throwaway show, why don't you not run pay-per-views those months? Why don't you only run 6 pay-per-views a year? Now, I know people are going to say, well, Brian, they've got contracts with the pay-per-view companies. They've got these contracts with the pay-per-view companies. For now, they have to run 12 pay-per-views a year.
Yep.
Fine. If that's the case, try. Try promoting a pay-per-view that's going to sell. Don't just give up and say, well, nobody's going to buy this pay-per-view. Well, why? Because you suck as a booker. If you knew what you were doing, maybe some people would buy your pay-per-view. You can't just say, no one's going to buy the show, so we're not even going to try. You have to try. You have to try to sell a pay-per-view. Because otherwise, you're basically throwing away money every month. And another thing, I just wanted to mention this very quickly, because somebody emailed me about this. Everybody knows why WCW went out of business. And people, you know, people, Kevin Nash will talk about AOL, Time Warner, the merger. The merger is what killed us. Oh, really? The merger happened in the year 2000. You guys were dying in 1998. You guys started falling off a cliff in March of 1998. I specifically remember. I wrote a book about it. March of 1998 was when this whole thing started to crash. It wasn't AOL, Time Warner. And it wasn't the other favorite excuse, well, we have all these big contracts. You had all these big contracts in WCW at a time when this place was grossing $225 million. These big contracts weren't a big deal at all. The big contracts were fine if you would have made money to pay these people. But the problem was, you weren't making any money. So all of a sudden, these big contracts, which weren't a problem, became a problem because you weren't making any money. The year that WCW went out of business, everyone in that entire company could have worked for free, and you would have lost tens of millions of dollars because it didn't have to do with the contracts. But with that said, let's look at Impact right now. Hulk Hogan, Ric Flair, Mick Foley, Jeff Hardy, RVD, Sting. Where's the money coming from to pay for these contracts? It's like the exact same thing all over again. Why? Because as mentioned last week, you hired all the people that ran WCW into the ground. From the writers, to the guys on top, to the production people, you hired all of those same people that ran WCW into the ground, and they're the people that are putting together TNA in 2010. And you wonder why you're not making any money, you're doing horrible ratings, you're getting your ass handed to you by Raw. There's the answer right there. Because you're doing the same thing that killed WCW. Mike, I'm sorry I ranted for so long. I ranted all the way up to the break. So we're going to head to the break right now. We'll come back. I'll get your thoughts on this. And then we're going to head to our hourly break. We'll come back, take more phone calls and emails. And I promise we're going to stop talking about Impact. Because now it's starting to get my dander up again. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And I hogged that whole last segment ranting and raving. So, Mike, the floor is yours.
See, you can blame that on me. I'm sorry for getting you all fired up with the beginning of the show today. But, you know, the one thing people also forget about the pay-per-views is, too, TNA doesn't get all of that money. That's split with the cable companies and with the satellite companies. And, you know, people say that, well, they have these contracts. Look. If they can make, you know, whatever the 18,000 buys, cut that in half, you know, that's the money. If the pay-per-view companies can get more money out of airing something else in that time slot, they'll be able to renegotiate the contracts. And TNA, if they do, they need all the time in the world to build to a pay-per-view to try to get something out of it. So cut it to six a year and look at what Ring of Honor does in Charlotte. If it works again, do a stripped-down, bigger show from somewhere else, from a different feel, from maybe that the race car driver in Virginia, go to his place, have a pay-per-view set up location there, strip down, charge people for it, and maybe you get those 9,000 people that watched those YouTube skits last week leading into Impact on Monday, get them to order it, and that would make far more sense, and they could keep all of that money.
We're going to talk about WrestleMania after the top of the hour break. We've got the card. We'll talk about that, SmackDown, NXT, and got a lot of other news as well. I watched the Evolve DVD. It was interesting. We'll talk about that. And, of course, the new member of the WWE Hall of Fame. What huge wrestling legend has been added to the WWE Hall of Fame? We're going to talk about that later on in the show as well. Plus, your phone calls and emails. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live, here for the next hour, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Hour two here on the show, joined, of course, by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare at WrestlingObserver.com. Talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, although last hour was really the TNA Power Hour, just talking about that show for 60 minutes, and God knows why we spent that much time, but We'd like to see things change. But it's time to switch gears a little bit and talk about WrestleMania 26 coming up in just a couple of weeks. I'm actually going to be down there live for WrestleMania, so we'll see what happens with the show. We may end up having to do a replay that week or something. We shall figure it out. Maybe quite the... It's going to be quite difficult here over the next couple of weeks because we have WrestleMania with the UFC weekend. We've got Easter, everything like that. And, Mike, are you looking forward to the WrestleMania show this year?
Actually, I am. I mean, just if nothing else, it's not that it's a one-match show for me because I do look forward to WrestleMania every year. It just, you know, even in the worst of times, it's still WrestleMania, you know? It's a day to celebrate K-fabulousness. But with Undertaker and Shawn Michaels, obviously... That just makes the whole show for me and is worth the entire price right there. I wonder if the changes to Money in the Bank are being made to possibly have some sort of, you know, double finish that will lead up into possibly playing into stuff later on in this year to set up the new Money in the Bank pay-per-view. But, you know, the Orton Legacy feud is what it is. I'm really looking forward to seeing Cena and Batista now, even though for... The longest time, I really wanted Bret Hart and Vince McMahon put into there because I just didn't want to see them in a one-on-one match under any circumstances. But Batista and Cena had been so good that I'm actually really, really looking forward to that. And I'm kind of now, even though the build hasn't been that good, I'm getting a little bit more intrigued with Steve Austin hosting on Monday night over what's going to happen with Bret Hart and Vince McMahon.
We're going to run down the card for the show as we know it after the break. We've got 7 matches announced, and we've got some news about the Money in the Bank ladder match. There are probably going to be some additions there as well. Talk about the main events, title matches, that sort of thing. Plus your phone calls and emails. A lot of stuff coming up in the next hour, so don't change that dial, as they told us repeatedly on Impact Monday night. Can't get it out of my system. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Ryan Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here to talk about WrestleMania. Time to switch gears and talk about Mania, the top matches on the show. Do some quick look at the lineup here and some predictions. The main event, of course, Chris Jericho and Edge. And they set this up a little bit more at the SmackDown tapings this past Tuesday night. I was actually there live at the SmackDown tapings. WWE is like a fun show to go to live. I had fun. It was like there was some good stuff on the show. We watched NXT. The Punk and Ray segment obviously was great. Fun production. It's just a fun show to go to. But when I was leaving, it actually was not until I was leaving, which I guess is the key here. It wasn't until I was leaving that I realized there was almost no wrestling on that program. Like almost no wrestling to speak of whatsoever. So... I don't know. It was fine, but they set up Jericho and Edge. They're building the match around the spear, and of course every time they do a segment, Edge has been spearing Chris Jericho, and of course on the show Friday night he went for yet another, but this time Jericho knew it was coming. He hid the belt. He whacked Edge in the head with it. Edge didn't gig. I was hoping he would gig, but he didn't. Edge was knocked unconscious. And that is their big build for their match at WrestleMania. And what are you thinking about that particular battle?
Well, yeah, I didn't get a chance to see SmackDown because, as everybody knows, this time of year being college basketball season, it engulfs the airwaves. So my affiliate didn't have it. But, you know, I don't want to actually see it. They're calling it the main event. I really would rather see Undertaker and Michaels close the show. But, I mean, it's Jericho and Edge, and how great is that? They're going to be great together. This feud can continue on for a while. My hope is, I'm sure Edge is probably going to win at WrestleMania. I kind of hope he doesn't. I hope Jericho is able to slimy pull it off somehow, and that continues on the feud because they're great together, and the more they're together, I mean, at least there's one thing that you know, no matter what, guaranteed is going to be, you know, a great thing to watch on Friday night. So I'm thinking Edge is probably going to win, but it's my hope that Jericho does, because they're just fantastic.
Speaking of Undertaker and Shawn, that one's interesting because
Well, Brian, actually, before that, you said the no wrestling thing. It was like the CM Punk when he first came out, when he came out and did the Serena segment that week. And they opened up SmackDown with essentially, I think it was like 25 minutes because they had Batista destroy Finley in like 30 seconds. But the first half hour of the show was all talking and moving storylines and angles. But it's when that stuff is that good, it doesn't matter. I mean, it does matter. Obviously, you need to have some wrestling sooner or later, but it takes the edge off because the stuff is so good, you're into it. Like Undertaker, that's all WWE had to do last Monday night was start off with The Undertaker and Shawn Michaels, and it didn't matter what came next because you locked people in with that.
Yeah, it's a very important note because, I mean, sometimes we'll note that, man, Impact had 12 minutes of wrestling on the show. And then someone will email and say, well, you do know that Raw had 12 minutes of wrestling on the show. And it's a pro wrestling TV show is not about the content. It's not about the amount of wrestling.
In 2010, no, it is not.
I mean, sometimes it is. I mean, the key to it is it a good show? Is the stuff on the show good, whether it's in-ring or an interview segment? I mean, if you've got a show that has a number of really, really, really good interview segments and not a lot of wrestling, you're not going to notice there wasn't a lot of wrestling on the show. And not only that, if the little wrestling, let's say that you've got 4 3-minute matches, and that's what makes up your 12 minutes. If you have 4 3-minute matches that are spaced out in a way on the show where it doesn't hit you on the head that there's no wrestling, that's one thing. On Impact, I mean, there are times where I'll watch that show. I remember counting once. There were once eight non-wrestling segments in a row. It was to the back to one segment. Then they went to another part of the backstage area, then another part of the backstage area, and then another, and another, and another, and another, and another. We literally had 8 non-wrestling segments in a row. When that happens, it is hammered into your head that there's no wrestling on this show. And again, if all 8 backstage segments in a row had been really, really good, maybe I wouldn't have noticed. But when all of your non-wrestling stuff sucks, then you're begging for good wrestling. And when you don't even get that, it really is frustrating. So,
and when they go out of their way, the thing is, because TNA and Vince Russo specifically has been the one that has gone out of his way to say, people don't care about that. I'm not worried about the geeks and the wrestling, even though he apologized for saying that about the 40s. When your stuff that you're saying instead that you know that people want to watch sucks that bad, that just compounds the insult. And that's the compounds the bigger insult with TNA, with the programming that they're producing. We're going to tell you what you want, but it's going to suck too. And that just compounds everything too.
So the Undertaker-Shawn deal, it was a good segment on Raw, and it did go a long time, and it didn't bother me, because it was really good! So, they're doing this match at WrestleMania, and last year, everybody thought that Undertaker and Shawn should go on last. But it didn't. It went on in the semi-main, and Triple H and Randy Orton had to follow them. Fail. Hunter has even said, I believe on TV, that we could not follow your match. He's admitted it. This match could not be followed. Now, Undertaker and Shawn this year is a rematch that is being sold on the fact that last year's match was one of the greatest of all time. So, obviously, it's going to be really good. And they've added the no count out, no disqualification stipulation because the idea is that, you know, there's no countouts, there's no DQs, you can go into the ring and get stuff, you can use tables, you can use ladders, you can use gimmicks, you can use smoke and mirrors. This is going to help the match, because last year they did a straight wrestling match, and with Undertaker as banged up as he is, he's even more banged up than last year, same with Shawn Michaels. I don't know if a straight wrestling match you can top last year, but if you have a few gimmicks you're able to do, I think they can equal it. Maybe top it, I don't know, but the point is, it's going to be really good. Now, will they have learned a lesson? Going back to TNA, these people never learn lessons about anything. They don't learn from their successes. They don't learn from their failures. We're going to find out at WrestleMania if WWE has learned a lesson from what happened last year. Are any of your title matches going to be able to follow Undertaker versus Shawn Michaels? Is Batista versus John Cena going to be able to follow that match? Probably not. I don't think it's going to be a bad match, but I would guess it ain't going to be able to follow Undertaker and Shawn Michaels.
No.
Jericho
no
and Edge, I don't know. I don't think they're going to be able to follow Undertaker and Michaels. So to me, you got to put Undertaker and Shawn Michaels on last this year.
Because of the stipulations that have been added in with it being, you know, career versus streak and everything else that's been put into it, absolutely. I think the only conceivable thing that I think would work, and I would absolutely not do this, would be you put that match on, you have some sort of gimmickry after it's over to cool everybody off again. I don't know if you have something wacky with the women there or something like that, but you have something to cool everybody off, and then you do Vince McMahon and Bret Hart if you're going to do something huge and something that you want the media to latch on to. And see, that's the only way I could see it could work, because it's not there. Batista and Cena are going to be around for a while. You know, this is not going to end anything with them. Same thing with Jericho and Edge. You know, the match is going to be great. But again, everything is wrapped into this Undertaker-Michaels one, and there's just no reason to not have it at the top.
See, the thing is that, like, you can't... Actually, I want to talk about this after the break, because we're coming up on the break here, and I've got a lot to say about this match and the placement of it, and I'm going to talk about the philosophy of WWE and how they normally do pay-per-views and why this one here is different. And I've got a couple of examples of matches that maybe should have gone on last but didn't, and why they made that decision, and why this is an example of a time where I realize that titles are important and all that, but this is a time where you can finish with a match that is not a title match. We're going to talk about that after the break. Phone calls and emails as well. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts for the next half hour, 45 minutes. We're talking about the WWE WrestleMania pay-per-view and the Undertaker Shawn Michaels match. And before we went to the break, I was talking about the placement of this match. And WWE, traditionally, they want the title matches to go on last. It's very important to them. And in fact, the biggest WrestleMania of all time, not WrestleMania 3, it was WrestleMania 23 in Detroit. They did 1.25 million buys, by far the biggest WrestleMania of all time. And that show was built around the hair match. It was Donald Trump and Vince McMahon putting their hairs on the line. We had Lashley and Umaga in there as their surrogates, basically. And that was by far the biggest match on this show. And it didn't go last. It was sixth on the card. It was followed by the women. And it was followed by John Cena and Shawn Michaels in a singles match. Now, they wanted the title on last. That was the main reason for this here. And I know you could argue that the Trump-Vince McMahon match was so big that it should have gone on last. But they made the decision not to. The titles were more important. They did the same thing last year with Undertaker and Shawn Michaels. This year, this is a big stipulation. I realize that titles are important and everything like that, but the stipulation here is Undertaker's 18 or 17-year streak is going to come to an end, or Shawn Michaels is going to have to retire. Now, as big as your titles may be, I think even WWE has to realize that these two stipulations are bigger than the belts this year. The Undertaker, his streak, it's been almost two decades he's had this streak. It's a very important thing. The Shawn Michaels career, for God's sake, is a huge thing. So this is like that one example. It's bigger than Vince's hair. It's bigger than Trump's hair. This is that one example where you can say, this should go on last because what is at stake here is bigger than your world titles.
Yeah, because to me, they always look at WrestleMania with them, the importance of having the title matches. You know, it's a bone thrown to wrestling fans, too. One, you know, by doing something like, you know, with Vince's hair and stuff, it gets the media package all done and ready to go by the 11 o'clock news, too, for those people that still cover it then, and they can get that stuff out faster if they do it that way and get it set up so everybody can have it in the morning. Now, they're not going to probably be able to do that with Bret Hart and Vince McMahon, although, you know, for Canadian TV stations, I'm sure we'll, you know, latch onto it and do something with it. But, you know, you can throw the bone to wrestling fans this year because it's The Undertaker and Shawn Michaels. You don't need the title match there. I mean, yeah, because of those stipulations that you have there, it's not fair to any, for those two, because of the stipulations that they wouldn't be the main event. It's not fair to anybody else to try to follow that. I mean, because again, how do you calm down the crowd? You calm them down with the women's match, but even if the Orton and Hunter build-up didn't fall off a cliff last year, they still wouldn't have been able to follow.
Let's take a phone call here. You're on Wrestling Observer Live. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hey, Brian, it's Peach Machine calling from St. Louis.
Peach, what's going on?
Hey, I got a question for you about Fedor. I just got a copy of all of his fights, and I don't know how familiar I was with some of the old stuff. I saw a fight with him against Ricardo Arona, and I thought he won that fight. I think it was the first round in some tournament. It was the tournament where he ended up losing with the cut. My question, I guess, is what happened to Arona? I mean, he kicked the crap out of what appeared to be Fedor.
That fight was actually really short, if I recall correctly.
The Arona fight? No, it went two rounds complete, and then the judges raised both their hands, and it went to a third.
The Ricardo Arona fight. Mike, do you remember this?
Was that in rings?
I don't know what it was. I got the tape. It's all in Japanese. I can't really tell. But it was in a tournament, and the next match he goes on and he loses by cut.
Yeah, that was rings, because he went on and lost to TK with that cut that really should have been just ended up being a no contest.
That was
Yeah, I'd have to go back. I think it was 2000. I'd have to go back and actually look at that fight, because I don't really remember it outside of that was the tournament that he ended up getting that one loss in.
Yeah, I actually never saw that fight. I just know that, yeah, the second one was the second one where he actually lost. That was a really short fight. It went just like, I think like 20 seconds or something like that. And
Arona had a lot of success in Pride, too, at 205. No, well, not a monstrous amount of success, but I mean, he was a regular player. He was good.
He was dominating Fedor for two full rounds, and I was wondering, did the judges, were they really protective of Fedor?
Not that early in his career, no.
No,
I wouldn't think so. Yeah, but I was just curious. So right now, he's not doing anything.
He is doing like real low level shows. I mean, once Pride died, I think he's had one fight since Pride went under. So. I don't know. I don't know what happened. He went back to Brazil and he did like one show down there and that's it. So I don't know.
Cool. Well, I was just thinking, you know, that would be maybe another top, you know, heavyweight Dana could look at. But I guess if he's not really doing anything, I guess not. So,
well, the rumor is he's going to be heading into UFC. But you know, all of these things are rumors until guys show up, because you know it's same thing with wrestling. You always have guys saying, well, you know, I've been talking to Vince. I'll be heading in soon, that sort of thing, and we'll see.
Right. Cool, man. That's all I had.
All right. Thanks very much for the call.
All right.
Going back to Shawn Michaels very quickly. I just wanted to mention also in this match here as well. I mean, the stipulations are so big that it's one thing to humiliate Vince McMahon, shave his head, and then trot out the women. But I mean, how do you have? I mean, realistically, the finish of the match is probably going to be that Shawn Michaels loses and he retires for a set period of time. And however they decide to bring him back, it probably doesn't matter at this point. But the point is that when WrestleMania is over, for a period of time, Shawn Michaels is going to be retired. So how do you do this Undertaker-Shawn Michaels match, which is probably going to be awesome? Undertaker wins. Shawn Michaels has to retire. Now, I realize, I know exactly what everybody's going to say. Well, Brian, Ric Flair and Shawn Michaels, they went on fourth at WrestleMania a few years back. Ric Flair retired, and they continued on. That's true. That is true. But
different.
It is different in the sense that the Ric Flair retirement, I mean, I was there for everything, and I watched how they built it up. I mean, Flair had been off TV for months and months and months before all of a sudden they just brought him back and he had the thing where I'm not going to lose any matches or I'm going to quit. And they I mean, WrestleMania wasn't really his retirement match. I mean, it was just billed as this is Ric Flair's next match. If he loses, he has to retire. And he happened to lose and he happened to retire. I remember being there live, and when they played Ric Flair's music, like fourth on the card, I thought, you've got to be kidding me. Why isn't this closing the show? And there was an argument, actually, that it should close the show. But I will just say that the reaction to Ric Flair's retirement and the rest of the show that followed, they made the right call. It's just the way it felt when it was over. They made the right call. With the Shawn Michaels retirement, I mean, this is being built up. It's a very different thing. This is not like, you know, it's being built up as one man is either going to retire or his streak is going to end. I mean, you're guaranteed something is going to happen here. And Shawn Michaels has been a very important part of TV pretty much nonstop since he came back from his back injury. I mean, he took some time off last summer and that sort of thing. But he's been a regular character. They've been building this up for a long, long time. And especially after the Ric Flair retirement. I realize that the TNA thing kind of screwed it up. But WWE never brought back Ric Flair. The retirement ended up being permanent for WWE. So I think that's going to help a little bit in making people believe. And I just think I just don't think you can retire Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania. He's Mr. WrestleMania. I mean, even if all else being equal with Shawn Michaels and Ric Flair never had the Mr. WrestleMania handle. How do you retire Mr. WrestleMania and then go, here come the girls? Just doesn't work.
Well, unless Eve's wearing that green outfit again, because that was fantastic.
Still doesn't work.
And the thing with Flair was, too, you know, everybody knew the deal really going into it. They had the big Hall of Fame, you know, induction and ceremony the night before where he was able to give that speech that he gave. Then you had it in the middle because, and realistically for WWE, too, I mean, obviously, you know, Flair means a lot to people. The reaction that he got and everything that went on after it, but they needed to continue on with their other stuff after that. Plus, you know, I don't know if Flair knew it or not, you know, how big it was going to be. They still had the Raw on Monday to give the big going away, too. So, I mean, with Michaels, they don't have enough time to do something so special where, they can't do it at all. It's got to be the main event, period.
That is the big match on the show, and before we head to the break, let's run down a couple of the other matches here, and then we'll talk some more news when we come back. And we've also got some emails I want to read. Of course, the Raw title match is going to be John Cena against Batista, which is actually only their second major pay-per-view match. You can go back to Ohio Valley Wrestling, and they've done some tag stuff as well. But this is going to be their second major match. They're playing up the last time they wrestled. Cena broke his neck, which is somewhat true. He did I believe it was a cracked vertebrae or something like that, and that was at SummerSlam, of course. So
yeah, this is going to sound really awful to say, and not for John Cena's sake, but in storyline purposes, that was kind of the best thing that could have happened. Not the best thing that could have happened. That sounds terrible to say, but just because they rushed into that match and it didn't mean anything when it was happening, so at least you got a story coming out of it, because that, remember at the time, that was kind of a waste.
Yeah, they announced it 2 weeks before SummerSlam, and it was horrendous. And it didn't help the SummerSlam buy rate at all, because they did such a poor job of promotion, so they'll make it up here. But Batista's promos have been awesome. Like, so awesome that's actually one of the most eagerly anticipated matches at WrestleMania. And, you know, before they started doing the interviews, they haven't wrestled a lot, but they've been in the main events and they've been champions so many times that it almost doesn't seem like a fresh match, but it actually is. So that's a big one. We talked about Jericho versus Edge. Bret versus Vince. Let's talk about that after the break, and then we'll wrap up the rest of this WrestleMania preview here and talk more news, emails, and the like. So we'll head back here in just a moment. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here for the next 20 minutes or so, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, taking your phone calls and emails as well. We're talking about WrestleMania here, some of the big matches on the show. Bret Hart and Vince McMahon. It's going to be an interesting one. We're going to have to see what kind of condition Bret Hart is in. We're going to have to see what kind of condition Vince is in and what kind of match they can have without hurting Bret. And I'm going to talk about that here in just a moment, but we've actually got somebody here on the line. You're on Wrestling Observer Live. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hey, what's going on, Brian? This is Alex from San Diego.
Alex, what's happening?
Hey, first I have a comment from Mike Sempervivi. If he's on, I don't know if he's on the line, but because Shinsuke Nakamura was able to have good matches with guys named Sugiura and Tanahashi and Goto, it doesn't make him as great as Sempervivi always thinks. And then my question is, if TNA were to fire Vince Russo, who would you both like to see brought in?
I could name how many people are on the earth right now? 5 billion? 4.5 billion? Anybody. I swear to God, I'd have you go in and book before I'd have Vince Russo do it.
I'd have Shinsuke Nakamura do it.
Nakamura could do it, exactly.
Oh,
hey, look, Shinsuke Nakamura, look, I'll never say he's better than Tanahashi or anything like that. I think he's just been a little more underrated than people give him credit for. But he's also, again, over the years been hampered by some of the things that have happened in New Japan, but he is starting to also creep back into his own. So, and I don't overhype Nakamura. I just think he's been a little bit underrated over time. Realistically, and this will never happen, of course, obviously working with Ring of Honor or anything, but you need a Jim Cornette style of guy to be able to just worry about the pacing and the ability to get people tied into a couple major storylines. One, he'd be good at tying back all the loose ends of all these other storylines. I mean, you can tie them back up again, and you need somebody who can do that, and then give people a couple of things to lead into trying to get them to buy a pay-per-view, and it's going to take time. And you need somebody with a little bit of vision to do that.
Jim Cornette. Paul Heyman.
Well, no, but a Cornette type. I mean, obviously Cornette couldn't do it, but his work with OVW, at least as far as the show and these storylines you need to worry about, you need somebody who can just do that, and that's it.
Actually, Jim Cornette could do it. And, you know, I know that Paul Heyman would say that he wouldn't do it, but if they gave him the money that they gave Sting, for example, guaranteed he'd do it. And he'd be a hell of a lot more valuable than Sting will be with that kind of price tag. But
yeah.
I'm not going to rant. I'm done with TNA for the day. So going back to Bret Hart and Vince McMahon, as I mentioned in the newsletter this week, there's an incident that has come up. Apparently it came up like shortly before they shot the first angle with Bret and Vince. But I guess Bret has like a Lloyd's of London policy. And apparently it came up right before their first angle that Lloyd's was going to have to okay the way the match was put together. And Bret, of course, was obviously going to have to be very protected. And I think that's why the original plan when Bret signed was to do a singles match. And when they first started doing the angle, it appeared they were leading towards Bret and Cena against Vince and Batista. And I think it was because of the Lloyd's London deal. Now, I don't know if they bought out Lloyd's or if they okayed a match with Lloyd's or what the deal was, but it's back to being a singles match again. But a Lloyd's of London deal definitely came up and had people in the office very badly sweating that this whole thing was going to be all screwed up. And I guess they figured out what to do. Bret has made it clear that this is not going to be a Bret Hart match from 1997. He is very limited, but he says it's going to be an entertaining match. So I guess we shall see. What do you think?
I hope so. It's hard for me to envision how, although I can't remember if it was, I think Lance Storm said it with you this week. You know, the prospect of maybe Austin putting himself, getting involved, being the host this week and somehow getting himself involved in the match, because they're obviously going to need a lot of bells and whistles. And I don't know. I really don't know what to expect. I can't say I'm expecting much. There's going to be a level of cringeworthiness that, hopefully all the bells and whistles and gimmicks that they're provided work.
See, as of a couple of weeks ago, Austin was not scheduled to be at WrestleMania. And I don't know if that's changed. I know everybody thinks that Austin as the guest referee in that match would be a great deal, and maybe it would. I just, to me, I know that I've mentioned before the idea of Vince, you know, announcing that he's going to have Mr. Hebner as the referee, and a lot of people have said, God, that's a stupid idea, and maybe it is. But to me, the whole idea has to be, And maybe this is because so many people watch TNA nowadays that they don't understand, like, an old school, not even a wrestling story, just going back to the dawn of time, the first stories ever written. The hero has to have an obstacle to overcome. If you announce that Steve Austin is the special referee for Vince versus Bret, I mean, it's almost, you're almost positioning Bret Hart as a heel. Because with Bret Hart versus Vince, especially if Bret reveals that he's not really hurt. I mean, it's one thing if Bret Hart goes in and he's hurt. You know what I mean? But if they do the storyline where Brett announces that I didn't really hurt my leg, I just wanted you to sign the contract because you wouldn't have done it otherwise. I worked you. I screwed you. And now you're forced to get into the ring with me. But I still had a stroke. At least there's still something for Brett to overcome. If Brett announces, hey, I'm totally healthy. I was messing with you. And Steve Austin's the referee. I guess in a sense, you know, maybe it's something that people will pay to see Vince McMahon humiliated. Maybe Vince is such an overheel that this will work. But to me, it's almost like, you know, Brett, Vince is now the one. No. Vince is now the one that has an obstacle to overcome. He's got a healthy Bret Hart, largely, and a biased referee. You know what I mean? I just feel like there has to be something. There has to be some sort of obstacle for Bret. And if you announce he's healthy and he's got his referee, why is he a hero here?
That's true. And, you know, even not even looking at it that way and just looking at it as, you know, somebody basically looking at it, if you do that, that, you know, it's either a glowing sign that Bret Hart is going to win the match when Austin screws Vince, or Austin's going to turn on Bret, which will never happen and would just, you know, could be completely a black hole of suck anyway. So, yeah, I guess you'd be giving it away that way, too. I think maybe even a better idea would be it was played up initially with John Cena, the fact that, you know, I ball you guys up and I throw you away like garbage when I'm done with you. That maybe that they could get every possible guy that they can get, you know, who's under a Legends contract, if they can, maybe they get them to come and during the match kind of come out, walk out, and like kind of surround the ring or something like that, or maybe they play it that way.
Yeah, there's I mean, obviously there's going to be smoke and mirrors. I mean, that's very, very obvious. And I don't think you need to announce Austin as the referee. I don't think you need to tell people that Brett is going to win, because I'm not saying all stories, but most stories have a happy ending. And in wrestling, most stories at WrestleMania have a happy ending. I think that most fans deep down know that if they pay for WrestleMania, they're going to see Vince get humiliated. I think most fans know that. I don't think you need to flat out tell them. And I don't think you need to position Brett as a guy who's going to get a whole bunch of help to win. You know, that's why my Mr. Hebner idea, I mean, the point of that idea, whether you say Mr. Hebner or not, the point of the idea is Vince has got to set up some sort of obstacle for Brett to overcome. And I think fans are going to know that ultimately he's going to. But still, there should be some fun little doubt in your mind. Like, what are they going to do? How is Brett going to get Vince in the sharpshooter at the end? You know what I mean? I think everybody knows exactly how it's going to end. Brett puts him in the sharpshooter, Vince taps out. Great! You can at least have some sort of story where there's something for Brett to have to do to get to that point. Not just tell people, by WrestleMania, you're going to see Vince get beat up. Not only by Brett, but by Steve Austin. You know, I don't know. Maybe it's just me. But that's kind of the way that I look at it there. We've got Money in the Bank. It's Christian, Dolph, Kane, Shelton, Swagger, MVP, Matt Hardy, Evan Bourne, and Drew McIntyre. 9 guys. There are going to be 10. There's one more qualifier on Raw. The rumor is it'll probably be won by Kofi Kingston, although I hope I didn't just screw Kofi out of a WrestleMania payoff right there by saying that here on the air. But that was the rumor over the weekend. But regardless, I don't know. 10 guys and Money in the Bank? That sounds like a complete cluster.
To do something later on, it'll end up, you can bring back up later with the Money in the Bank pay-per-view. And, you know, I'm a fan of it. You know, 6 guys, even 8 guys, okay, that's fine because you need enough guys to do the basket catch and all that other stuff. But 10 guys with all that, the ladders flying around and 10 dudes flying around, you know, obviously they're pros and they're going to be careful, but that's just to me a couple guys too many. There's other ways that they could institute guys into matches on the pay-per-view. You know, they could have just left it alone with, you know, have the 8 guys like usual and Drew McIntyre being Vince's boy gets the spot. You know, I think they could have just ended it with that.
Plus with 10 guys, I mean, forget everybody flying around. If you've got 10 guys there, there's going to be a lot of time where guys just have to sit outside and not be able to get into the ring or be selling for extended periods of time and just kind of sitting out there looking stupid. I don't know. Maybe it's going to be great. It could be great. but it just kind of seems like it's going to be a cluster. We've got the tag titles, Miz and Big Show against Morrison and R-Truth, just kind of a throwaway match. And then Triple H and Sheamus, which I wanted to mention here very quickly. People have, obviously the TNA fans, have kind of got on me saying, well, Brian, you know, why are you so mad about blooding up Ric Flair when on Raw Monday night, Triple H beat up Sheamus and sent him packing to set up their WrestleMania match? Which is true. I mean, but the difference is, Monday was not the go-home show. I mean, exactly. I fully expect that sometime in the next 2 weeks, Sheamus is going to destroy Triple H, destroy him, and Triple H will have to, you know, will have some heat on Triple H leading into WrestleMania. It's fine to have the babyface run off the heel several weeks before the big show, and then the heel comes back and does something dastardly a week later or 2 weeks later. That's all fine. Now, if Hunter beats up Sheamus and has his hand held high and his head held high in the final Raw before WrestleMania, well, number one, we'll know that Sheamus is winning at WrestleMania. And number two, it probably doesn't even really matter anyway because this is not the main event. That's also the key. This is not the main event. In fact, really, without the title on the line, this is just a match at WrestleMania. And nothing really exciting about it at all.
You, in theory, this could open the show. I mean, not like it's a crack against Triple H or Sheamus or anything, but you could actually open the show with that and be fine. And I think it's a bad argument to make trying to compare, you know, the TNA thing with Sheamus. Again, yeah, you got 2 weeks. And Triple H isn't that stupid because there's still a sting. There's got to still be a sting over last year. And Sheamus is his project. So no, I think that's I have more confidence in them than that going into WrestleMania.
Yeah, when I look up the lineup here and I think about the way WWE operates, I would actually bet that Money in the Bank, of all things, is the opener. I just have this feeling they'll open with Money in the Bank and probably follow that up with like the tag title match or something like that, which doesn't really matter and doesn't necessarily need a lot of heat. But that would be my guess. I'm not quite sure where they'll go, but I would guess Money in the Bank opens up the show. We actually have to head to a break. When we come back, we're going to tell you who the new member of the WWE Hall of Fame is. What big professional wrestling superstar is going into the WWE Hall of Fame? That's coming up next. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here for the final segment on the show. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, and the big pro wrestling superstar, the newest addition to the WWE Hall of Fame, is former multi-time world champion Bob Uecker. No, seriously, Bob Uecker is going in. What? Dick Ebersol will be inducting him, and man, I can see some legit superstars and former champions very upset about this one.
I'm just very disappointed that it's not Mr. Belvedere inducting him to the Hall of Fame, and it happens to be Dick Ebersol.
That actually, you know, I got to say that I'm not going to the Hall of Fame at this point because we don't have tickets, but and I really don't care looking at the lineup at this point, but if Mr. Belvedere were putting Bob Uecker into the Hall of Fame, I swear to God I would do anything I could to get into the Hall of Fame this year.
I just, you know, they had it at their entertainment one, so, you know, a lot of ways I'm fine with that. You know, it is what it is. So you got the entertainment guy every year, but I don't know. Outside of that package of Andre the Giant putting his hands around his neck and choking him, for everybody that wondered who that was, that's Bob Uecker, who is the announcer in Major League, and he's a longtime Milwaukee Brewers announcer. He used to be in Miller Lite commercials and stuff like that, but I mean, they're going to have to do some work on that one because there were people that didn't get the Mike Tyson punch-out references that John Cena was doing when Tyson was on there, so they're certainly not going to remember Bob Uecker, I don't think.
Yeah, I just hope that in some way they mark out and Bob Uecker gets more time to talk than Ted DiBiase. We got to wrap it up here today, everybody. I want to thank you very much for listening. Always head to WrestlingObserver.com. Tons of news updates. And, of course, as mentioned, if you scroll down the right-hand side of the page, the list of the latest 3 free radio shows, download them, listen to them, put them on your iPod, and if you love them, WrestlingObserver.com, $9.99 a month, pretty much daily radio shows. If not, we'll talk to you again next week. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network.